Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Love That Lasts podcast, where we talk about faith, culture, and answer your questions. And we share helpful resources and tips as well. And this week, in our mini-series called Anatomy of Marriage, Seth and Melanie, our producers, take us into the world of family of origin and talk about the way that our families actually shape the way that we do marriage together as a couple.
So do you know what family of origin is, Matt?
Yes, I do. In fact, Seth explained it to me one time in a way that I thought was really good, and he was taking a graduate course about how families interrelate and are balanced like a mobile hanging over a baby's crib. And when one thing's off, it gets off. That's currently the way that I think about family of origin.
So we're going to get clinical a little bit earlier than normal, but it's worth it. So just hang in there. Family of origin refers to the significant caretakers and siblings that a person grows up with, or the first social group that a person belongs to, which is often someone's biological or adoptive family. But it turns out the family of origin is much more complex than the definition would have you believe. Dr. Les and Leslie Parrott explain.
Well, the home you grew up in is your university of relationships. And so you learn more about relationships from that home than you'll learn from any book or podcast or seminar or anything else the rest of your days, for good or for ill. And so we learn positive things and negative things. But family of origin, it's difficult to exaggerate. Mm-hmm.
The power.
The power and the continuing influence that it has on our relationships and us as individuals.
And part of the power is it's so unspoken. It's so unconscious. You don't realize it. You know, it's just the only way you know to be in the world. Mm-hmm. It's the only way you know to be in a relationship. And it's not until someone calls you out that there's maybe a different way that you even become aware of it.
There's two major influences from the home you grew up in, and that is unspoken rules. All of us have an invisible rule book of how life is supposed to be lived that's built and constructed on what we saw growing up. And sometimes we don't even know we have rules about how life should be lived until we get married, and then our spouse begins to break those rules, right? And then secondly is unconscious role expectations. We all come into a relationship with these unconscious and super powerful expectations about how that person should behave based on what we saw in our homes growing up. And that might be something we want modeled and repeated, or it may be just the opposite of that. But either way, it's powerful.
Well, it's powerful because we feel loved or unloved on the basis of whether or not the other person lives those rules. And so it's very powerful.
Okay, so I never thought about it that way before, but every hour you spend around your family of origin is essentially is like an hour in the lab or in a classroom. And so no matter what you want to learn or what somebody told you the Bible says or your church group or your premarital does, that pales in comparison to the intense amount of training you've had in marriage and family systems that you're not even aware of.
Yeah, just think about what the parents were just saying. It's like the university of relationships. Mm-hmm.
So that's my husband, Seth. You'll recognize him from last week's episode.
Mm-hmm. You know, like we are all professionals in our family of origin. Mm-hmm. We have the most training. We've spent the most time.
More than 10,000 hours.
More than 10,000
hours.
Learning
something that was, likely broken.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
There is an idea that became popular a few years ago that claims that it takes roughly 10,000 hours of deliberate practice to achieve mastery in a field. This could be anything from gymnastics to rocket science. But think about how many more hours you spend just living with your family. And those hours can be things like fighting over the TV remote, listening to your parents argue about racial issues, marriage equality, what types of clothes they think are acceptable for teenagers to wear, or what kind of music they should play at church.
How did you meet?
I work for her dad. I was, before that, doing auto body stuff, restoring old cars, and her brother has an old Mustang that had put floorboards in.
This is Charlie.
So I was out in the garage. I think it was the first time we really met.
Mm-hmm. And his wife, Nicole.
I'm Nicole.
And she walked out to get something out of the freezer, and we just started talking.
What was she wearing?
I believe she was wearing pink pajamas.
They had cats on them.
Cats.
But I just remember his, like, he was so cute. Well, he was missing his two front teeth, right? Yes. And he just had the most amazing smile, and it was really cute and funny at the same time. See him smile with a big gap.
time for some backstory.
I was like 10-ish. I was going down a hill on my bike, and over the handlebars, I saw one tooth, ding, and the other one I must have swallowed. And my best friend at the time was riding behind me. He said he ran over my head. So he also went down. But that was...
Ran over your head.
That's what he says. I don't know. I blacked out for like a split second.
Probably because you ran over your head.
As you can tell by now, Nicole and Charlie are a fun-loving couple who really like to laugh. Nicole also happens to be my childhood neighbor, who I have been friends with since I was 10 years old, so we get along pretty well. She and Charlie dated for about 3 years and eventually took the plunge and were married back in 2012. Their wedding was a beautiful and fun celebration, complete with a huge choreographed swing dance. It was so much fun. But it didn't take long for things to get complicated.
Religion has been a big thing, and I think that's impacted me more than I've realized.
So Charlie grew up attending...
Just a conservative Christian...
Church of Christ.
Yeah, no music, nothing like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's all a cappella, which is awesome.
Well, yeah, sorry. I meant no instruments.
No instruments.
While Nicole...
Assembly of God Church. You know my mom. Like, she's out there dancing, praying in tongues.
Backflips.
Yep. Yeah.
So how, when you got married, or when you were dating or engaged, did you talk about that stuff ahead of time?
A little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. We would visit each other's congregations and stuff like that.
Now here's the part where Family of Origin makes its debut.
I was always raised that instruments weren't really allowed in church. It was never anything anyone ever did.
So this is where stuff gets kind of tricky, because you could say that culture is at work here and not Family of Origin. But in the case of choosing a church, Family of Origin would inform the type of church that you are drawn to. For example, if I was raised in a home that valued strict moral codes, I might look for a church that mirrors those values when I become an adult, or I might just default to the type of church that I grew up in because that feels comfortable and I understand it. But in Nicole and Charlie's case, they are technically a part of the same religion. They are Christians, but, and this is a huge but, their churches have different views about the role of instruments in the church. And this is sort of just hitting me. It isn't even the role of music in the church, just the role of instruments. And this one small difference that has been ingrained in both of their understanding of the church experience throughout life is colliding into something much bigger than either of them anticipated.
You know, we go strictly New Testament examples for church. So there was no direct example of them using musical instruments. It just says, like, you know, heart strings and stuff like that, which we take to mean from the heart. It was very different going to her church, where it was very loud. Yeah. And very showy. I felt like a lot of it was just show. Mm-hmm. It's hard because a lot of her family does instruments and stuff in their church. Their whole family is the band. Mm-hmm. And I know they're very godly people, but I still feel like I go to see a show. Mm-hmm.
I wanted to share this story specifically because of the way that one seemingly small aspect of Family of Origin, such as the preferences of instruments in a church, can deeply affect a relationship. It actually does have much broader implications than just, oh, I like this or I don't like that. And just like so many other couples that bump into the conflict of Family of Origin issues, Nicole and Charlie just did the thing that felt the easiest at the time and sort of solved the problem. Kind of.
So I was going to Charlie's church a lot, and he's very, very solid in his faith. And I was okay, I was more okay with his church, so we just kind of flopped that way. I don't know, I didn't feel like there was a lot of opportunity to explore more. Mm-hmm. So I'm dealing with some bitterness, I think, which is seeping out in other areas, and that's not good.
Do you think that this one issue has affected other things in your marriage?
I think that part of me is a little resentful, I think. And that I think that I feel like what the resentment is coming from is I feel like I gave up like 20 years of my life, and that's a lot of myself to lose. And so I think that is more of where the resentment comes from. It's like I had to give up this giant portion of my life, and I don't feel like you did, if that makes sense.
Makes sense. I figured we'd definitely go to different churches. It just never happened.
Yeah.
So after the second draft of this episode, our producer Matt called me for some editing notes, and I sort of did a naughty thing. I actually recorded our conversation without telling him. At first, I mean, I told him after the fact that I had recorded him, but he had some really great insight about family of origin and what he thought all of you would want to take away from this episode. So instead of me narrating what he told me, I figured I would just play some of that recording.
You naturally assume that not what you're used to is wrong.
Yeah.
And so I want that to be stated really clearly. And then there's a bunch of places where there's plenty of opportunity to demonstrate it that aren't even happening. Like when they started going to Charlie's church instead of Nicole's because they just went there. Mm-hmm. It would be really awesome to insert some say, but even that action of the fact that they wound up going to her, his church instead of hers, mm-hmm. why didn't she fight for that? There's so many families where it's like, oh no, the woman would get her way no matter what.
Yeah.
Right? So that's a family. That's family of origin.
Mm-hmm.
I love the part about how you break it down to they're even the same religion and they're only talking, and not even music, but with instruments. Mm-hmm. Like, it's what you're doing there is making it seem like this stuff is arbitrary, but it doesn't feel arbitrary to the people in it. That would be the most, actually, if you're talking about what would help people from listening to episode two, that would be the biggest takeaway.
Okay.
Oh, my family of origin things are simply arbitrary. I never even questioned them or realized the weight I put into it, mm-hmm. but it's simply his are different, or at least as strong as mine. The whole point of it, that you set up so nicely, is that it's completely unconscious bias that you've even had all this training in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, a good analogy would be, it's like, I'm sure you won't get the analogy, but it'd be like Jason Bourne. Like, he wakes up, no memory, but he knows all these fighting skills. You know what I'm saying? You know that story?
Sort of.
I'm sure it's not your kind of movie, but everybody knows.
Seth loves it.
Jason Bourne is like, he's obviously worked for a government or something. They've erased his memory. So he wakes up and whatever, but he's just the ultimate fighter and everything. He doesn't know how he knows it or what it is, but just that's it.
Yeah.
And that's the way we feel about all of our stuff. I mean, whatever it is that we're like, we strongly know it. It's muscle memory, all of our reactions and the way we do stuff. And we're not even aware that we've had training.
See? I told you it was good.
Wow, Seth and Melanie are learning that the way we are raised really does impact us so much more than we ever think it does. And I don't think me and Alyssa could say a louder amen than that, that how you are raised is what you bring into your marriage, for good or for bad. We'll learn more about this idea and hear more of Seth's family of origin story after a quick word from our sponsors.
This episode of the Love That Lasts podcast is brought to you by Datebox, the monthly subscription that helps grow your relationship. Guys, we love Datebox. Our best friend started it. They live in Oklahoma, and it is the coolest thing because every month you get a box that's packed with everything needed for a fun, creative, and unique date night, and it's delivered right to your door. You don't even have to think about it. You don't have to make reservations. It's like the best thing ever. So visit getdatebox.com and use the promo code LoveThatLast at the checkout to get your free box. Datebox, your relationship matters.
Now, back to the story.
But, yeah, I think the biggest thing, though...
Here's me and Seth in the car again.
For me, coming through this is like the... And honestly, it sounds really, like... I don't know what the word is, but it just sounds sad, like pessimistic sad. Or something. But like this idea that I can hurt you just and make you feel just as bad as I feel. Which I guess I just didn't think. I never thought I could hurt you the way that you were hurting me, you know? I just thought, you're stronger than I am. You understand more than I do. You're older than me. There's no way I can hurt you like you're hurting me. And so I didn't even think of it. I just didn't think to not do it. You know? And
to not do what?
To not just say what I felt. I just thought, well, he'll get it. He'll understand. He's older and he knows things and he's been a Christian longer. He'll get it.
So you thought that you could just like dump everything?
Yeah, I just... Me? Yeah, I thought, well, what won't he? He'll understand it.
I think that that's how you've hurt me the most and worst. by assuming that I could be that person for you. Does that make sense? That's how you've hurt me the most and worst.
I see that now, actually, in like the recent conversation we had where you said something along the lines of you're not the pro at something. And I've always viewed you as, no, he knows what he's doing. He understands this, he'll get it, and he'll be fine, and he's strong, and he knows.
That makes a lot of sense, because that's how, I think that's how your dad presents, and you've just given him everything, like, oh, you know, he doesn't care, it doesn't matter. I've heard you say that a lot, you know.
Here's some more from my phone call with Matt.
That's the way we feel about all of our stuff. I mean, whatever it is that we're like, we strongly know it. It's muscle memory, all of our reactions and the way we do stuff. And we're not even aware that we've had training or why we would be so conditioned to immediately think I can dump on my husband. Why? I mean, you didn't ever decide to do that. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It was no different than breathing or driving a car that you've done 1,000 times. That's what you would do. And you didn't know that you've been trained to do that.
Yeah.
I love that. I mean, that's really good and really helpful if we can illustrate that, like, really.
Yeah. So I sat down with Seth and Matt, and we talked about that car ride conversation.
I think that clip brought up a lot, including birth order stuff. Most of the research that talks about family of origin issues also includes birth order, like youngest sister of sisters or youngest kid of 5 kids, which that's what you are, and me being the oldest.
And she's the youngest?
And Melanie is the youngest, and I'm the oldest brother of brothers. So we kind of unconsciously just perpetuated the roles that we had in our family.
It's almost as if you're recreating what you know.
Yeah, it's kind of like just always going back to what you know. Yeah. People want to do the right thing, but we usually go towards the thing that is most convenient. That's what we do. We go towards what we know.
It's interesting because the training for our marriage may come from our parents, but not so much of their relationship sometimes. But for instance, how Melanie related to her dad, that's the strongest male relationship of somebody older and stronger than her. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, she's going to naturally treat you the same as she does treat her dad. Right. Meanwhile, a dad is often trying to be immovable and not, you know, needy from his kids and things like that, where I could see how she would get that impression from him that you can dump anything on me, I'm your dad. But that doesn't necessarily work in a husband-wife relationship.
Yeah, so that's going to take a paradigm shift on your part. It's like, oh, this isn't my dad. Like, I can still be, you know, strong or solid and stuff, but strong and solid as a husband figure, not a dad figure.
Well, what's the difference?
Well, the difference is this. With my daughter, I want to be bulletproof and be able to take anything that she could ever dump on me and not have her feel like I need anything from her. But part of that is because of an age difference and everything else. But in a way, that's training her to think that way about her husband, which may not be appropriate.
Yeah, I think if you could model that same strength, but also kind of illustrate, and this would, of course, be developmentally and age appropriate to the kid, but also like, hey, you know, you as a person, kid, enriches my life. I'm learning, you know,
and that's
then the kid feels a sense of like some sense of autonomy, like, oh, this is my special thing that I can, you know, share with my dad or share with my mom.
But it's not neediness. There is an interdependence that's healthy.
Right. And it's reciprocal. It's a healthy reciprocal exchange. And sometimes they even call it serendipitous exchange, where out of a relationship, I'm gaining something while I support you, and the other person is also giving me something while being supported.
You don't want to need anything from your daughter, right?
Right.
But what that did for me, I think, was that I felt like my dad didn't need anything from me.
Okay.
That like whatever I did was never good enough.
Or didn't matter.
Yeah.
So to be an ironclad superhero of a dad or a husband is unrealistic and ultimately maybe not the most healthy, even if you were capable of pulling it off.
So it feels like slightly derailed here, like we switched topics somewhere in the middle. But I found that this seems to happen with every single topic of every single episode in the entire season. One thing slowly creeps into another, and before you know it, you've gone from family of origin to daddy issues to expectations, and then back again. But these topics are, in the words of my therapist husband, part of a system. And in a system, one thing affects another, which in turn affects another. For example, you can't remove a person's foot without it impacting other parts of the system, like posture, muscle structure, the way that person walks. Your foot is not just a foot. It's a part of the entire body. And family of origin is not just family of origin. It seeps out into things like communication, understanding, the ability to be flexible, how you respond to stress. It's omnipresent and inescapable. And the more we're aware of our own family of origin issues, the better we can understand why we do the things that we do in our relationships. For example, can we talk about your family?
I think so.
Is that all right?
Not if they listen to this. Well, I remember in grad school, it's a common thing for students to like diagnose every single person they know, right? So I was constantly for 3 years, like every single day, going through my own family of origin issues, you know, thinking where, oh my gosh, you know, I realize that's crazy. You know, why would I think that it's okay for my my grandmother to come over like every day and rearrange my room? Or
wait, did she do that? House.
Yeah, she did that. You know,
and I would, your grandma,
my grandma. You know, I would move a piece of furniture in my own room, and she would come over and clean the house almost every day. And I would come home from school like, oh, what is moved today? That's not normal.
I remember that too. That Seth's grandma would come when we were in high school. Seth's grandma would come over and literally rearrange his underwear drawer inside his underwear drawer when he was in high school.
I don't even remember that. Yeah, but that's crazy.
What?
I mean, there was just no boundary there.
Yeah.
You know, we thought it was funny, and to Seth it seemed normal. Or Seth thought it was a little bit funny, but
yeah. Well, it was enough to irritate me, yeah. But had I not known that that was abnormal, I guarantee that I would think it was normal right now in our own marriage, you know, to rearrange stuff, to think where they should be, not taking into account your preference or what's convenient or what even is right, you know. So that's a perfect point. It's boundaries. You know, clear, there are all kinds of terms for it, like diffuse boundaries, rigid boundaries, open boundaries, and some of them have, you know, tenets of good things, but most of those are used to describe, like, no, this is not normal. So growing up, taking those boundaries of normal, like, well, of course we do it this way, you know? What? You're going to wear that? You know, we're not sitting down for supper, and those are like other unspoken rules and stuff. But I think our marriage was, we had to work through that big time.
What do you think our biggest thing that we had to work through was? Like, if you just look at it from family of origin perspective.
I think there's a lot to do culturally, of course, being from the South and having all these rules.
That's a different episode. Don't talk about that one yet. There's lots of other things though, like you say you don't like people to be critical. You don't like it when I'm critical, but you
I can be critical of you and others.
Well, no, you're I don't
like you
say.
Don't recognize it when you're being critical.
Yeah, and you're hypercritical.
Yeah.
And so many of my friends are like, Seth cares about what your sofa looks like. Part of the reason that Seth is so critical is that his family of origin was created from a very specific time and place.
Hello, my darling.
Namely, England during World War II.
Somebody gave us half a dozen eggs. We were thrilled. Mm-hmm. But we didn't complain.
Seth's grandmother, who is the matriarch of his family, came from a world that we can barely imagine.
And then I was in school when I first, at the first, and we would just march down under these banks, you know, and sing rounders or something to keep the hours going.
Yeah.
I mean, when the air raids came, they came so often that you didn't get, you know what I mean? You knew that you had to get safe if it really got bad with the aircraft and everything. We'd walk home from a dance and they'd be up there, you know, caught in the searchlight. Young, invincible.
How do you think going through the war affected who you are as a person?
Gave you courage and strength and the ability not to be upset over small things, you know. You just faced it. Didn't bother us.
Yeah.
I'm very pragmatic on everything. I mean, even as your family was dying, you had to keep going. Mm-hmm. We had a good life. I had a good life. I was dancing all the time. Yeah.
In 1946, at the age of 19, Seth's grandmother came to the United States from England on a ship named the Queen Mary. She was a young war bride.
I came to the United States and was shocked at the United States. I only knew it through the eyes of the movies and the stars, and my own life was far advanced.
Were you disappointed or surprised?
Well, I'm going to make the best of everything and never admit that I made a mistake.
Right.
You know, because I went to the back of the Queen Mary as we were leaving England, and I stood there and I watched it, and I was 19.
Wow.
And I said, never going to see them again. And telling myself, standing there, but hoping, you know, that things were going to be great. There weren't.
So this is the backbone of Seth's family of origin. His incredibly resilient 90-year-old grandmother, who lost her brother along with so many others in the war, who came to the United States on a ship, and who learned etiquette growing up as a young woman in England. And although her life couldn't look more different than the life that Seth and I lead, she has had an enormous impact on our relationship, even though she lives 3,000 miles away. Her upbringing was full of queens and castles. There were very set rules, hundreds of years old, and when you break those rules, she lets you know. So in our marriage, Seth and I are currently shaped by events that happened 80 years ago. We wanted to see what else there was to learn about family of origin, so Seth went back up to SPU to interview a former professor of his, Dr. Claudia Groff-Crowns.
Dr. Claudia Groff-Crowns, and I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist, and also work as a medical family therapist. And I'm the director of clinical training and research right now, but I have been a chair for 14 years of the marriage and family therapy program here at Seattle Pacific University. I've been licensed since 1982, at the beginning of time.
Seth sat down with Claudia and picked her brain about family of origin and the role that it plays in marriage. And just a reminder here, Seth is a marriage and family therapist, so he's going to throw around some pretty fancy words, but don't let it scare you.
Elaborate a little bit on the developmental stages of each person, and then when they come into that marital dyad, what does that look like?
Okay, so I'm going to repeat what he said, but like a normal person would say it. So hold on, let me... Okay, here we go.
Elaborate a little bit on...
Can you tell me about...
The developmental stages of each person.
How people who are different...
And then when they come into that marital dyad, what does that look like?
Respond to getting married. We did it, folks! Can you tell me how people who are different respond to getting married?
Right, so one of the things we kind of look at is the readiness of people to partner in relationships. So, for example, if you grew up in a family that was very stressful and difficult and there's a lot of tension and not a good models of relationship, people have hopes and dreams that it's going to be different, and yet they don't have the skills or the tools to do it differently because they haven't learned them yet.
Yeah.
And so if you're kind of wanting to flee your family and cling on to somebody, then that developmental phase of joining together is going to be more problematic, as opposed to a person who recognizes some of those deficits or those struggles, or they've had kind of difficult relationships, learn about them from their own history, work on that a little bit more personally, and then come in a little more prepared to be partnering with somebody else, realizing they have their own needs and they have their own wishes, but other people do too.
Yeah.
And to really partner effectively, you have to make room for both people. You can't just want it your own personal way, which developmentally is like a younger child doing a temper tantrum.
I don't appreciate what she just said there because I'm the youngest child. Whatever.
And psychosocially, I think a big thing has to do with more family background or relationship history background and how that plays out in a current relationship. How you learn to, you know, does the toilet paper get rolled from the front or the back? Mm-hmm. How clean is clean?
Yeah.
You know, when if you get a bonus, is that spent for this or that?
Mm-hmm.
Those family dynamics come through. So then communication skills are awesomely important.
Yeah.
Negotiating, compromise, give and take, problem solving, all of those kind of traditional therapy skills are super useful. Really becoming a we. When we talk about moving from being a you to a we.
Yeah.
And so first I have to understand me, I'm a me, and then you come up and you're a you. and then you have to create a we. And those are all important things to pay attention to. You know, I don't like wedding ceremonies where they have two candles, and then the third candle, and then they blow out their own. I like them when all three are lit. You know, it's like you're still you. You still have come from a history that's important, but we now create something that's a we. It's a shared candle. That's something that we co-create together. And so new rituals can be done that way too.
Yeah, and plus we are where we come from.
We are very much where
we come from. You can't escape that, you know.
I mean, to me, it's kind of sad. The whole thing is kind of sad, it feels like, because whatever way that your family isn't complete or perfect is something that you are going to bring into your marriage and put on your spouse and not even know it.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a little bit depressing to think.
You'll like perpetuate it no matter what.
But unknowingly, you know, that's sad.
Unless you know about it. That's I've struggled with that as like a marriage and family therapist. I just think everything sucks. Like there's no hope for tons of stuff.
Should I play sad music? Say that one more time. I'll put some sad music under. Okay, go ahead.
As a marriage and family therapist, sometimes I just get so discouraged. Like there's no hope. In the words of my dad, you can't have nothing.
The way we are brought up really does shape what we expect from each other, how we behave together, and so much more. But the good part is that there is hope, and we can learn to become a we instead of a me. Amen. I know me and Alyssa completely agree with that and completely also know you bring into your marriage how you were raised, all your idiosyncrasies, everything about you, your narrative, your story, your good and your bad, you bring it into your marriage. And speaking of we, Alyssa and I will be back again next week talking about what truly makes people happy and dealing with feeling unwanted and how not to settle when you're single.
Our show is produced by Matt Carter, edited and sound designed by Melanie Studley. Special thanks to executive producer Craig Gross and StrongerMarriages.com. This show of the Love That Lasts podcast is brought to you by our book, Love That Lasts. We kind of wanted to break down the things in this culture that are kind of making us sick. Things about love and sex and divorce and just that realm. And so our hope is that this book can just encourage you, can give you wisdom on how to have godly relationships and also just be a real healing book. So I hope you guys can check it out and enjoy it. It's on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and any Christian bookstore.
Go to lovethatlast.co/book. You can check it out. You can get some fun goodies, pre-order awesome stuff. If you get it before October 10th, you can hit it on your phone or on a desktop. I'd love to hear what you guys think. If you take a look at it, if you go buy it right now at that site, lovethatlast.co/book, we'll send you the first 6 chapters instantly right now so you can get a head start. See you next week.